Hi, I'm Mike Gasowitz, CEO of TriCert Financial Group, and welcome to another episode of In Focus. Today, we're going to talk about the healthcare sector, and joining me is Brian Durno, our portfolio manager responsible for this sector. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you on the show. Okay, maybe as a reminder, just what constitutes the healthcare sector?
Well, the healthcare group is actually one of the ones that has a little bit more uniformity with the broad sectors. And in Canada, we don't have a huge healthcare sector. So most of our healthcare selections and work drifts over into the U.S. and the international side of things.
So talk to me. How did the sector perform from a business perspective last year and into this quarter?
Sure. Yeah, the markets last year weren't friendly to the healthcare sector, as a lot of the sort of growthier areas of the market got all the attention. But the actual fundamentals were totally fine in most cases. Now, there's always exceptions to that. But there is sort of a massive change happening in that sector that probably is worth spending a few moments talking about. You know, AI obviously gets lots of attention on the technology side, but there's something, you know, but it's very large and very important in the healthcare side. And that's these glucagon-like peptide agonists. These the GLP-1, the weight loss drugs.
Okay.
So yes, this is a very, very large total addressable market. It's affecting a lot of different industries in the healthcare space. And of course, we have a couple of, one in particular, Corpic, that's got some exposure here. So I thought, because it's been making a lot of headlines and lots of press and lots of people talking about these weight loss drugs and their impacts, because it is very, very early innings here. So this is a trend that will probably be with us for quite some time.
So what's the core pick? Which one are you looking at?
It's Amgen. And in order to understand where Amgen fits in this industry, it's probably important to lay the land in terms of, you know, what it looks like right now. Because as I said, it is pretty early days. So this market, you know, will probably experience absolutely incredible growth. It could be one of the biggest selling drugs in history, but time will tell. So a lot of the market, as you know, it prices in things that haven't happened yet.
Right.
And so we see things like with even Amgen's stock price can be a little bit more volatile, both on the upside and on the downside, based on the vagaries of the progression of the GLP-1 market. The market, though, generally right now is divided between Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly. So there's really only two big players that dominate the market in these early days. So they're sort of first to market. I might give you just a quick breakdown of just how big this opportunity is, because you've probably heard or read about it and aren't sure where the truth lies in all this. And of course, all these are estimates in early days, so lots can change. And so we're very comfortable working in this environment, but most people aren't as comfortable with the uncertainty. But so let's just deal with the facts that we have on the ground now. If we just take the U.S. market as an example, you've got about 270 million people that are adults in the U.S. Sadly, about 39% to 43% of them are obese. So that gives you quite a large market. By 2030, the market could be up to 100 million adults in the U.S. alone. So that's excluding all the other countries. So 100 million people, the average annual net price after some estimates and guesswork on how that will progress, say somewhere between $7,000 and $9,000 for a GLP-1 drug, that gives you a total addressable market size of about $1 trillion. So there's no way that every single adult is going to be on the drug. So you have to do, penetration rate. How many people?
Sorry, just so I understand, that addressable, is that over the lifetime of the patient, or is that on an annual basis? Sorry.
That's by 2030.
By 2030 in aggregate. That's what you're staring at. Got it.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So that just gets your attention in terms of the market size. And how important that market could potentially be. And so just keep in mind, there's a lot of estimates there. The population part and the obesity percentages are relatively strong statistical data. The hard part is the annual net price, the penetration rate.
Sure.
And the fact that the drug actually remains being effective over, you know, once we have long-term data on the side effects and these kinds of things, things can change quick in healthcare. Okay. But so there's a lot of uncertainty around any of these forecasts. But you can see $1 trillion market size certainly gets your attention.
Yeah, raises the eyebrow.
Right. Sure. And so then you have to draw your penetration rates to, so $1 trillion would be if every single adult, which clearly is probably not going to happen. I'm comfortable taking that position. But if you say a 10% penetration rate, you're at about $100 billion. And that's the market size that most analysts and media pundits are talking about, $100 billion. And that's where they got that number. So you can see that, you know, maybe it's a little lower, maybe it's a little bit higher, but you can see the validity of the claim that it's a large market that will be growing quickly in the next little while.
So how does Amgen fit into this then?
Okay, so back to Amgen. So, you know, this market is no secret.
Right.
So the fact that Lilly and Novo Nordisk have a head start here is clearly recognized by the market. Lilly's drugs actually statistically seem to have a little bit better clinical data behind them. So most pundits suggest that Lilly will end up with a bit of a lead. But Novo has a head start. And so the multiples, so the PE ratios of a company like Lilly that is clearly involved in a positive way in this space, around 61 times earnings, and Novo's around 37 times. So the secret is out.
Right.
Those are your sort of, and obviously those growth rates, you'd have to look, you know, you can call 61 times very expensive. Yeah, absolute. But the growth rate underneath it is one of the reasons the market is willing to pay such a high price. So when we go to Amgen, they actually had very successful phase one. So remember, you got to go through phase one, phase two, phase three, and then FDA approval. All this takes time and lots of things go wrong between now and then. And Pfizer is a perfect example. You've probably heard of Pfizer, but they are no slouch in terms of R&D and their ability to bring drugs to market. But they had a GLP-1 candidate, a weight loss drug, that they just pulled from the market.
Okay.
So, you know, there's no guarantees out there in healthcare land.
We're sorry, from the market, it was approved or?
No, it was a phase one.
Phase one.
It was
gotcha.
Okay. Early days. Yeah. Yeah. That's why they say sometimes it can take 5 or 10 years just to get these things to market because there's a lot of proof.
Right.
Before the FDA would approve the drug. So now we switch over to Amgen, who also just completed a phase one trial. They used to call it Amgen 133. They didn't have a brand name. Now they call it MariTide, which is a, you know, great bit of creativity from the healthcare companies. MariTide is the name of their drug. They completed phase one with pretty compelling data that would, let's say if you're comparing them side by side with Lilly and Novo, were very interesting and let's even argue compelling. But it's only phase one. So the length of the trial is very, very short. The number of people in the trial is very, very small. So it's hard to make claims when Lilly and Novo are not only past phase three, they're in the market with approvals. Right. So they're hundreds of miles ahead in terms of Amgen. But Amgen's phase one was very noticeable that it was positive. And they're currently in phase two. And the readout will come from phase two trials later in the fall this year.
Okay.
But the interesting thing that happens with this, so then you, when you look at valuing a company like Amgen, so Amgen was a fine business before all this GLP-1 started. You know, high, very extremely high ROE, high margins, and a pretty successful R&D platform. You know, a pretty good operator.
And were they on our core pick list?
Yes. We'd like to say that 10 years ago, we knew that this would happen.
We knew that this whole GLP-1 market would raise its head. Okay.
But inherently, there is an advantage to own larger companies in this space because they often are the ones that have the largest R&D budget. And the larger R&D budget means that you bump into a lot of novel ideas.
Right.
And so Amgen was able to develop this in-house. And so who knows how it plays out. Like, I'm not going to make any scientific claims about that. But the market, when we've had a few times, we're very disciplined on our valuations of companies like Amgen. And so it's hard with the market really takes a real good, let's say, positive view of the future of this phase two trial. The market price can go above our buy up to for a period of time. And so it, from our perspective, we observe this every day and we can say, well, maybe that's just a bit too much hype.
Right.
It's a little, the market might be just ahead of itself. And so we can be very disciplined about our approach in terms of our buy up to on a company like Amgen.
On the buy up to, if, and maybe this is too much of a hypothetical, and it is a hypothetical, but let's say phase two, again, shows very promising results moving into phase three. Would we make an adustment on our buy up to?
Yeah, this is a fascinating question on valuation. How do you deal with these binary type of lottery-like payoffs? And so the way we've approached it so far, and I'm not arguing we won't adapt and change our process as time moves on, but is to just weigh the probabilities of the success of the drug. So we obviously don't know how the drug will show up in phase two. You know, like I say, Pfizer pulled theirs. So there's no guarantees. But to completely ignore the fact that they have a successful phase one candidate that's currently in phase two would also be understating the upside part of the case on Amgen. So we let's say probability weight as we go along. But the sad part is we won't actually get the readout of data until later in the year. Right. So the market, of course, if let's say we used a 5 or 10% chance of success, I'm not saying that's what we're doing. That's quite proprietary, but let's just say it was 10%. The market might move to 50% on any given day and then back to 2% and then up to 50 or 80%. So the market has no reference to a valuation model. They, you know, it's a collective of people, but we can observe these facts and notice when it might be pricing in a little bit too much positive data. You know, and we're going to have to wait and see. We're fundamentalists. We prefer to, you know, witness the truth on the ground, the facts on the ground, and then we have a clearer runway. But all that being said, Amgen's only trading around 14 or 15 times. Even if the phase two trial fails and is not successful, you can still make an argument that Amgen without this drug is a reasonable candidate for owning it, because the valuation is not stretched. So it's pricing in on some days. It might be pricing in a higher multiple than you might be comfortable with. But mostly that's due to the success, the market pricing in a successful GLP-1 candidate.
Any concerns on, let's say they're successful all the way to phase three, they're kind of the third one to market. Any concerns about that?
Yeah, the data will probably be the driver here. That's a much trickier thing to forecast how it'll play out. If the data is strong and it's competitive with Novo and Lilly, then there's no, well, let's just say it's easy to imagine a world where there can be room for three players just because of the size of that market that we described.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So there's room for three or even four if another company, there's more than one company out there searching for successful candidates.
Given
this space.
The size of the market, makes sense. Right.
That's right. That's right. So it's not like, you know, if Amgen is successful and it makes it all the way through, then we can get our heads around them having a large positive exposure to that space.
Right.
It won't be crowded out by just two.
Okay.
Yeah, I might argue even Pfizer, you know, is a good example of, you know, in healthcare and biotech land, sometimes a low multiple without any growth. Like Pfizer was, let's just say, getting lots of extra love during COVID because of their drug exposure there, to COVID. And, you know, it really does matter to pay attention to the fundamentals on some of these companies. Their stock has fallen from about 56 to around 27 or so today. So there are no one trick ponies in this land. You know, in drug land, you always have to be replenishing your pipeline and you really have to watch. It's hard to just say 12 times as cheap or 15 times as cheap or even 60 times as expensive. You really do have to dig into the pipeline and get a feel for what size of market they're entering into.
And to your point, you know, with Pfizer, you were looking at a vaccine that thankfully would have a limited life, so to speak, and can't predict the future, but versus what we're talking about here with the GLP-1s, this is a very long-term play. This isn't a once and done for a period of time, arguably.
Yeah, and the health problems, we're starting to see lots of data that suggests there's all kinds of knock-on benefits to reducing the rates of obesity around the world. There's cardiovascular benefits, all kinds of other side benefits that will only probably get better. But that's assuming that everything stays clean on the longer-term data as we go through it.
Okay. Interesting deep dive there on Amgen. Anything else? Let's say the healthcare sector overall from a market perspective, how did it fare?
Yeah, it's one of the sectors that got a little bit almost ignored last year. And as a result, is very interesting in terms of some of the valuations and the fundamentals that are happening to the companies in 2024. So that is a space that we've been really, you know, rolling up our sleeves and looking into quite deeply. For not only new ideas, but the existing ideas we have.
Well, Brian, thanks for this.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, as always, don't hesitate to reach out to your financial advisor or talk to your TriCert Investment Counsel portfolio manager. Or as always, don't hesitate to reach out to myself. Take care.